Sister Girls, it's me, Cherie, also known as the Sister Girl Next Door, and I'm back with another podcast episode. This episode is special because it is the second tale in our summer audio series, Campfire Tales. We have rounded up some of the dopest Black authors and writers who will be dropping a tale, a short story, or sharing a snippet from their published work. Now, I don't know where you're at, but grab a cool drink and enjoy. The second tale is called Journey by Nia Forrester. This tale was narrated by voice actor Gilbert Glenn Brown.
Journey, a mistress, wife, mother short story. Written by Nia Forrester. Read by Gilbert Glenn Brown. March 20th, Allentown, PA. Now, there was one dude on the block who kept a journal when I was inside. His Muslim brother. And he wrote all the time, day and night. Kept his head down, his lips moving as he wrote. Now, I couldn't tell whether he was praying or talking to himself. The one time I asked him what he was mumbling about, and he smiled. "Talking to Allah, my brother," he told me. "Ar-Rahman, Ar-Rahim." His name was Ahmad. And he never got into it with anybody, and everyone left him alone. And he wasn't a prison Muslim. He was a real deal zealot who was inside because he'd beat his teenage daughter to within an inch of her life when he found out she had a boyfriend. I mean, his case was in the papers and on television a lot because folks were still looking cross-eyed at all Muslims because of 9/11. Now, I asked Ahmad about his case one time, which broke code. You weren't supposed to ask anybody about their case, but I asked. Because Ahmad looked like the most peace-loving dude you would ever meet. And seeing on television what he'd done to his own flesh and blood, I just couldn't believe it. That he would, you know, do something like that. "Man's law or the law of Allah?" he responded. "Which should I choose? La ilaha illallah Allah." Now, some of the other Muslims told me Ahmad was full of shit and that if he truly followed God's law, he would understand compassion. Now, rumor had it, Ahmad planned to finish the job he started on his daughter when he got out. Now, the only thing I guess I learned from Ahmad was that writing things down can be purifying. So, I'm writing. When I left New York yesterday, it was already dark. Thought about leaving at first light, but didn't know whether I'd want to leave if I waited one more day, especially after seeing Keisha. She cried before I left. Real tears, fat drops rolling down her face and dripping off the tip of her chin. And I wanted to stay to comfort her, but knew I couldn't. Because then it might get really hard to leave. And I had to. Because I have some things to work out. And on top of all that, I'm not sure I trust her. I want her. I like her. Hell, maybe more than like her, but I definitely don't trust her. And what kind of messed up shit is that? To want a woman you can't even trust? So I had to leave. Right now, I'm in a Motel 6 in Allentown, Pennsylvania. I don't know why, except that I saw the exit signs and decided to check it out. Because of that Billy Joel song. From my room, it looks like a depressing place to live. The song was depressing too. Now that I think about it. About how some place that was brimming and alive practically died. Now, that's how I feel sometimes. Like, maybe I died when I was inside. Not physically, but in other ways. You know, in prison, I was inmate number 01-B-8746. And now, I'm not even that. And I'm not the Jason Holmes who went in either. That cocky bastard got the shit beat out of him 3 days after he went in, so Who am I now? That's what this journey across country is about. Finding out. Well, I won't write any more tonight. Too tired. A little scared. Wondering what in hell I'm doing traveling hundreds of miles away. Had to tell my PO because I have a 5-year tail on my sentence. He didn't have to approve it, but he did. His name's Chester. Older white dude who looks like he's been doing this for dog years. He has runny eyes, cloudy blue. Behind his glasses, he stared at me when I told him my plan to travel and see the country. Expected him to ask me why or what I was planning to do out there. I expected him to be suspicious, but he didn't seem to be. I hope you find it, he said. I didn't even tell him I was looking for anything. I didn't even know for sure that I was, but I guess I am looking for something. And I hope to God I find it too. March 22nd. I thought about heading south to Philly, but that seemed kind of obvious. So instead, today I headed west towards the Appalachian Mountains in the direction of Pittsburgh. Stopped once so I could call my sister. And Chloe sounded like she was crying, but trying to hide it. I think she believes I'll never come back. I wanted to tell her that the only way for me to really come back is to go on this trip. See, I never really came back home from prison. And for the longest time, working in Ray's garage, going home to that small room in his house, sleeping with a bunch of women I didn't care about, that wasn't me. That was me in limbo, waiting for Jason to come back. Like I was asleep and going through the motions of the dream, waiting to wake up. And Altoona, this woman tried to pick me up in the parking lot of a gas station with a little diner attached. And I thought she was just looking for a quick hookup and was thinking that maybe she had a hotel room nearby or something. I mean, she looked like she hadn't slept in days and her breath smelled like crap, too. It took me a minute to realize that she was a hooker. One of those they call lot lizards who walk through truck stops and do tricks for like 10, 20 bucks a pop. And once I realized what she was, I saw about a dozen other women like her. Kind of messed with my head a little and messed with my head a little that I couldn't even recognize hookers when I saw them. What the hell am I doing out here? My cousin Ty used to pay crackheads to suck his dick once in a while. I could never do it. I mean, when he made fun of me, I told him it was because I was too attached to my dick and I couldn't imagine putting it just anywhere. He looked like he didn't know what the hell I was talking about. Ah, man, Ty. Stupid-ass Tyrone. And one of these days, I'll stop being mad at him. But I'm sure as hell not there yet. Not even close. I wanted to call Keisha when I found a hotel for the night. Just before I closed my eyes, I thought about her and the way she says my name, Jay, with the A elongated like she's caressing it with her tongue. Caressing it with her tongue. Yeah. That's just what I need to be thinking about right now. Shouldn't be thinking about that. Or about her at all. So I'm just gonna stop. For now, anyway. Till maybe tomorrow. March 27, Canton, Ohio. I fell in love while I was locked up. Nah, not with a dude. Although that does happen, even the guys who weren't gay before they came in. You know, I have a theory that the human heart is like that. You know, it seeks out something or someone to love. And if you live an unfulfilled life, it's only because you never found that person or that passion which filled your heart to capacity. In my third year in, I thought I found that. Her name was Donna Pierce. She was a law student in her final year of school who came onto the unit as part of a reentry program. They showed us films about guys on the inside preparing to get out and coming to terms with the things they'd done, the time they missed, and the lives they ruined. After the film, Donna led a discussion where I guess we inmates were supposed to see something of ourselves and the men in the film. Though she put up an image like she was comfortable sitting around on the unit with a bunch of beefy, horny convicts, I could tell that Donna was nervous. She didn't know what to do with her arms and legs when she sat and spent lots of time arranging them, probably trying not to be too alluring. Well, when you locked up, it doesn't take much. Anything that bears hints of the feminine will make your dick hard. And Donna bore more than just hints. I mean, she had shoulder-length hair that she wore out whenever she came to the prison, and a deep, rich complexion that reminded me of Belgian dark chocolate, and her eyes, black as coal. Now, I remember the eyes and complexion now, but at the time, I was more focused on her hands, slender and graceful, the slight hint of breasts she had, and they were small, but more than enough for a dude in prison. And her beautiful, curvaceous hips. I went to watch her films, but never participated in the discussion afterwards. Though I sat there staring at her. I hadn't done a crime, so what the hell did any of that have to do with me, right? That's what I thought at the time, that I was somehow going to come out of prison different or better than the other dudes who actually had done a crime. Stupid. Now, one day after one of her screenings, Donna approached me. Now, usually the guys descended on her like locusts, asking questions they didn't care about the answers to. At this time, I was about to saunter away. She stopped me. And she didn't just stop me. She touched me. She touched my arm. That was like a lighting. Shoot, that was like a fucking forest fire. Having a woman touch me all soft and gentle like that. Hey, she said, what's your name? You always come to these discussions, but you never talk. I'm Jason, I said. And just that quickly, just because she looked at me in the eye and because she was a female and pretty and touched me with an intention other than custody and control, how's her love? Donna came back many times after that, and for a while it seemed like she loved me too. But that's a story for another day. April 1st, Toledo, Ohio. The plan was that I would go due west toward Indiana, but a couple of days ago, I woke up and decided that maybe I would drive north to Michigan instead. Look across the lake, see Canada. I thought maybe even going to Canada. Now that I have a felony conviction traveling to other countries is it's going to be tricky. I mean, I can go to Canada and Mexico, though, because all I need to get back in is my driver's license. Thinking about all the things that aren't so easy anymore got me kind of moody. So I stopped in Bowling Green, and I saw signs for a place called Defiance and decided that that was where I needed to be. Drove into town around 3 a.m., and for about 6 miles, there was a cop car behind me. My underarms got all prickly and sweaty, and I started running down in my mind all the things I might get stopped for and what might happen if they ran my license and realized I was an ex-con. But they pulled off and went in a different direction after a while, and I could breathe easy. Well, I tried to, but my heart was still beating so hard I thought I might pass out. So I pulled over, and about a mile of the road saw the sign for a Marriott Hotel. And that's way above budget for me, but I went anyway. And that's where I've been for the last couple nights. Whenever I try to make myself leave, my heart starts beating hard again and I get clammy palms. I mean, I think they're panic attacks. I mean, isn't that some funny shit? I never, ever got panic attacks in prison. But I'm getting them now that I'm supposedly free. Well, this morning when I got tired of watching television, I called my sister. She wasn't home. Her husband answered and tried to make conversation, asked me how I was, what I was seeing. He told me about deep vein thrombosis, which I guess can happen if you sit for too long, like on super long road trips like the one I'm taking. No, I listened, thanked him, asked him to have Chloe call me when she got home. I'm being an asshole to him, and I know it, but I can't help it. Feels like, shit, man, he feels like an interloper in my life. Like he just swooped in and took a possession of the only remaining person in the world who really, really knew me before. So, anyway, talking to him wasn't satisfying, and no way was I going outside. Not ready for that yet. I called Keisha. She picked up the phone, and I could hear how happy she was that it was me. She sounded breathless. Hearing her voice calmed me. I let her talk. She has a job at a coffee shop, and she asked me where I was and whether I was excited to finally be on the move. I lied and I told her that I was. And I told her to tell me about her job just so I could hear her voice. And while she talked, I closed my eyes and pretended she wasn't hundreds of miles away. With the phone on speaker next to me on the pillow, it sure felt like she was right there. I already miss her. Can't believe how shitty this feels. And she's too beautiful to be alone for long. It's April Fool's Day, which makes perfect sense since that's what I feel like. A fool. April 9th. Deerfield, Michigan. Shit, I am sick of driving already. Hit the road again 2 nights ago after those few days in Ohio. I'm in Michigan now. Kicking the shakes wasn't what made me get the guts to leave. It was the statement of account. The front desk shoved under my door 2 months ago. Between the room and my first couple of nights when I ordered room service, ignoring the crazy-ass prices against my better judgment, I spent over $600 just being scared and locking myself away. Seeing how much money I spent already, without even getting that far away from New York, straightened my ass out quick and in a hurry. But because I couldn't make myself just walk out the door and face the outside world all of a sudden like that, I decided to take smaller steps. I worked out in a hotel gym, and that same afternoon I got the bill. Felt good to work up a sweat. So I'm in there, right? Grunting through some reps on the fly machine because the free weights were too light, and then this big girl walks in and gets on the elliptical. And she smiled at me, and I smiled back, taking in her hips and thighs and 40 double D's. She was sexy and womanly in a way only bigger women can be, just soft and... Anyway, it's funny, I never used to like larger chicks, you know? When I went in, I like hard-bodied girls with legs like varsity cheerleaders and flat, firm stomachs. Now this woman wasn't that. But while I watched her on the elliptical, I almost got hard. Now, to counteract all that, I have the weight, so I would have to concentrate on my form. So I'm clanging around, removing the pins, and upping the weight. When she looked over her shoulder, smiled at me. Ooh, she had pretty brown skin, smooth as milk chocolate, perfectly white teeth. "I like a man who can handle some weight," she said. And then she smiled again, and both of us started laughing. It was like she was flirting with me, but not really. Like, she saw an opening to use that funny, clever line and just had to go for it. And laughing with her made me feel human again. After all that time, cooped up alone in the room and with no real human contact except with Keisha, my sister, on the phone. Lynn, that was her name, was in Toledo for a wedding. And get this, she was from Brooklyn. I told her I was a New Yorker, that it felt like I was meant to meet her. And she smiled and said she thought so too. And we talked for a little, and she said she had dinner plans with the bride and some friends, but that she should be back early. Because the real festivities, the bachelorette party, was happening the next evening when the rest of the bridal party arrived. And by the time she left me in the gym, we'd arranged to meet up later at the hotel bar around 8:30. And when she left, I worked out another hour and went back to my overpriced room, took a shower, and lay across the bed and watched television. I woke up around 6 and called Keisha since I knew she worked the day shift at the coffee shop. I just wanted to hear her voice and the way she said my name. You know, every single time with wonder and surprise. And whenever I hear it, I feel something funny in the pit of my stomach and I miss her even more. I thought about Lynn and how different she was from Keisha physically. I needed that. Someone different from Keisha. Can't be getting all wrapped up in feelings over this woman who did the shit she did. I tell myself that every day. But every day I think about her as soon as I wake up. And every day I was in Ohio, I called her, talking to her at night. Before I got ready to go downstairs to meet Lynn later, told myself I had to limit my calls to Keisha. I couldn't use her as a crutch, and I couldn't let myself miss her the way I was either. So I told her a lie. So I was going to be clocking some serious driving miles and probably wouldn't have time to call her every day. I told her that I was forcing myself not to sleep so I could call, but that I would start calling her on Saturdays only. Okay, she said. Yeah, she didn't even fight it. which made me relieved and then a little mad. Like, why wasn't she complaining about that? I mean, maybe she already had some other nigga who would occupy her time. I didn't ask. No. I just sat there, being mad, while she talked and talked and talked. Like she knew I was being all funky but didn't want to call me out on it. And soon as I wasn't as mad anymore, I can't stay mad at her. Though I try. When I hung up, it was almost an hour later. Watched some more television, took a shower, and at 8:20 headed down to the bar to meet Lynn. And she was wearing a tight orange dress cut low in the front. High heels. I could see the bartender sneaking a look down her cleavage, and when I slid next to her on the bar stool, I snuck some looks in too. She saw me looking, smiled. "Buy me another drink," she said. I did. And then I got myself a burger and fries, and Lynn didn't want anything because she just gotten back from dinner. Good thing, too, because I was beginning to get worried about the rate of my spending. I ate. She drank the drink. I got her. She watched me eat and sucked on that tiny straw with crimson lips, and my dick got hard watching her do it. When I was done eating, she looked at me and said, "Let's not waste any more time down here." She wanted to come to my room, not have me come to hers. Upstairs, I kissed her as soon as the door was shut. She reached for my zipper and immediately fell to her knees. Oh, she sucked me off. And then we toppled over onto the bed, and after a few minutes, I was ready, and she rolled me like I was a prize stallion. It was good. And I only felt a little guilty about Keisha, who isn't even my woman. So, you know. When Lynn got off me, she said, "I enjoyed you." Now, that made me smile. I liked her. She's kind of cool chick. I would have called again back in New York, someone I could have seen myself kicking it with. Just casual on those nights when alone isn't what I want. But we weren't in New York. I told Lynn that I was checking out before midnight and hitting the road. I had only just decided that was what I'd do. After my time with Lynn, I didn't feel like my confidence was restored exactly, but she'd give me just enough of whatever it was I needed to walk out of the hotel and get back in my truck and drive. And we did it a couple more times, and I told her I was going to shower again and hit the road. By then, it was already past 11 o'clock. "You never told me where you headed," she asked me. She was pulling her dress back on when she said it. "I don't know," I told her. "I just know I need to get there."